say good evening to everybody that is out. Paul was planning on being out of town, but I guess plans had changed. But we had already switched, so we just left it as amended on the schedule. So Paul can take it next week and talk about Isaiah. So tonight, we're going to talk about this idea, continue with the Feast of the Lord. Now, the last time I had the lesson, how we talked about the first feast. And when I say first feast, I'm talking chronologically. So I'm just going to go through all of them from 1 to 7. So we started last time on feast number 1, which was the Passover. That was to be the first feast of the Jewish year of God's calendar. And so tonight we're going to talk about feast number 2, and that is the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And so it's not a real lengthy lesson, but I think it's still important. Because what I'm attempting to do here is really build the background. And it takes a while. I mean, so I'd rather do it in little bitty chunks. Just kind of build the background of the meaning behind all these feasts, where they came from, what their purpose was. And then as we begin to kind of look at it from a symbolic point of view, I think it'll make a whole lot more sense. So we're going to study the second feast, and that is the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Before we go further, though, let's go to God and pray. Well, I'll begin with the trivia question, see how well folks have been paying attention, been going through this series. If I was to say which book or chapter of the Bible is the most important to remember when studying the Feast of the Lord, what would you say? Which one details it the most? Which one puts it all together and compiles it in a nice, pretty little list? And so if you're thinking to yourself, I don't know, well, then you're over one today. And the idea is Leviticus 23. So try to remember that Leviticus chapter 23 is the passage that puts everything together. And so we're always going to kind of go back to Leviticus 23 for all 7 of these, because it just outlines them one after another. So our biblical definition from Leviticus chapter 23, verse 6 says, and on the 15th day of the same month. And so the same month is referred to the passage before, which he was talking about the first month. It's that one that looks like Nisan. And I've seen it with one S and I've seen it with two. So I don't know what is the technical proper way. And I would guess you would say it's something like Nisan. And I don't know, but I just think about the car and call it Nisan. But it was on the 15th day of that month is the Feast of Unleavened Bread to the Lord. 7 days you must eat unleavened bread. And on the first day you shall have a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work on it. But you shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord for 7 days. The 7th day shall be a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work on it. So it's got a couple phrases we're not going to be too familiar with. A holy convocation, that would be treated as if it was the Sabbath day, as best I can tell, the same kind of restrictions. And it says no customary work. That meant you couldn't do anything that was not an immediate pressing order. If a lady went into labor, you could help her have her child, because that's not going to wait for a couple of days. But if it was to do something, if you just needed to, pick up some sticks around the house that you've been planning on doing, you couldn't do that, because that was customary work. You could do no customary work. It also says this idea of unleavened bread. I think we're pretty familiar with unleavened bread. That just means it didn't have any yeast in it. It didn't have any type of material or anything that would cause it to ferment, to rise, to grow. And there's not much better than yeast bread, in my opinion. There's not much better than yeast rolls that just get nice and fluffy. Well, they weren't allowed to do that. It says for 7 days. So we're going to go back and talk a little bit about the biblical history, where this concept came from. So remember, we had the plagues. There was 9 plagues. As Moses and his brother Aaron were being sent to Pharaoh, going into Egypt and saying, let my children go. Let the children of Israel go. And Pharaoh kept playing games with them. And he would sometimes pretend like he was going to. Sometimes he would just know. Other times he would try to negotiate with Moses. Well, we went through 9 different plagues. And then we got to the 10th plague. And the 10th plague was one that I can't even begin to imagine. It was the death of the firstborn. And we were talking about this the other night. If it had been the death of the firstborn in our house, well, there went Meg and there went Drew, and that'd be sad. I mean, it would just be terrible. There'd go Kyler. It would just be, and just imagine how horrible that must have been, and how just unbelievably just disheartening, how what a tragedy that would have been. I'd have been all right, but I'd have probably been sad. But, you know, that would have been terrible. Can you imagine just the whole idea of the death of the firstborn of mankind, of your livestock? I can't even believe that. So after the death of the firstborn, the children of Israel left very quickly from Egypt. The Egyptians wanted them gone out of the land. So Exodus, the 12th chapter, gives us a little bit of the insight. Verse 31 says, then he, and that's referring to the Pharaoh, then Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron by night and said, rise, go out from among my people, both you and the children of Israel. Get up and get out of here. I've seen all y'all that I want to see. They didn't want to take any chances with it. Verse 33, and the Egyptians urged the people that they might send them out of the land in haste. For they said, we shall all be dead. I got thinking about this a little bit. We know the story because we're reading it from the biblical. We know that the firstborn was going to be killed. We knew that was coming. The Egyptians didn't know that. Have you ever thought about it from the Egyptian standpoint? They look around and all the firstborn are dead. Well, if I was the secondborn, I would probably be concerned that here comes round two. And they didn't know what was going to happen, why the firstborn were the only ones killed. But once they started putting it together and they saw all the death, if I was the secondborn, I'd probably start getting a little bit concerned. But the Egyptians said, we want them gone, or either that or we're all going to be dead. So apparently the consensus around Egypt was, is we need to get rid of these people now before this death plague continues. So verse 34, this is important. So the people took their dough before it was leavened, having their kneading bowls bound up in their clothes on their shoulder. So they left right then and right there. And they didn't have time to let the dough rise. I tried to make my grandma's roll recipe a couple times. It takes a while to get that dough to rise. You've got to get it just right, and then you have to punch it and pound it and knead it, and then you let it sit and it rises, and then you punch it and pound it again. And it's a several hour process. And that's when it's warm. So I don't know. This was kind of during early in the year. I don't know what it was like in Egypt. I don't know how long it would take bread to rise in those days. I have no idea. But they didn't have that opportunity. So it says they took their kneading bowls. It was all wrapped up in their clothes. And they took off with their bread before they had time to leaven it, before it had time to rise. In Exodus 12 and 39, and they baked unleavened cakes of the dough, which they had brought out of Egypt. For it was not leavened, because they were driven out of Egypt and could not wait, nor had they prepared provisions for themselves. So they didn't have time to wait. So when the Egyptians said, we need you gone, lest we all die, there wasn't any waiting around. They grabbed what they had. They didn't have time to let the dough. Apparently it was during the middle of the night, as far as I can tell. So they grabbed what they had. They grabbed their dough. They took off. And so then they were forced to eat unleavened bread. That's all they had in their time that they left Egypt. So because of this now, we're going to have a memorial that's proclaimed. Exodus 12 and 17. So ye shall observe the feast of unleavened bread. For on this same day I will have brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. Therefore, ye shall observe this day throughout your generations as an everlasting ordinance. For 7 days no leaven shall be found in your houses. Since whoever eats what is leavened, that same person shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he is a stranger or a native of the land. So this was serious. This was serious. If you were found to be sneaking leavened bread, if you were found to have a good old yeast roll during this 7-day period, it says you would be cut off from the congregation of Israel. Because this was a memorial. It was to be a reminder of how they left Egypt in haste. And how they had to just get their stuff and go, and they did not have time to deal with anything else. So I got a couple of notes here for you. Number one. No leaven at all was to be found in the house of the entire feast. So for 7 days, let's start counting. We know the Passover was on the 14th day of the month of Nisan, or Nisan, however it's pronounced. And then for 7 days, 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th, 21st. So it started on the 15th and ended on the 21st. 7 days, there was to be no leaven whatsoever, no yeast whatsoever found in the house. Well, because of that, people would go to great lengths to try to clean their house. And they would sweep it out. And some people think, and if you think about the timing of it, this first month of the year of the Jewish calendar, of God's calendar, is what we call March or April. And so they would go through, they would sweep and clean and make sure every crevice and everything was completely and totally free of peace. Well, that's during the spring. And some people think, well, maybe that's the origin of what we like to call good old-fashioned spring cleaning. And maybe that's where that concept came from, was the children of Israel sweeping and cleaning out their houses to make sure that the leaven was gone. So the feast started on the 15th day of the first month, and it ended on the 21st day. And it wasn't just a time that they ate unleavened bread. There were some other things they were responsible for. They had special daily offerings. And so it was a serious, it wasn't something easy. They had to different types of animal sacrifices. They had to have different types of grain sacrifices. It was a very serious situation. And I think this is interesting. It's also kind of angel food. I don't know if you ever thought about that or not. I go back to Genesis 19. That is where outside the city of Sodom and Gomorrah, remember how the angels came? And they ate, it says they were eating unleavened cakes, that the angels ate unleavened bread. I don't know if there's any significance to that or not. I just thought that was kind of a neat little story of unleavened bread, but that was the meal that one time that angels had. So, Passover and unleavened bread. Let me tell you, this is one of the more confusing things that you read about even in the scriptures, is a lot of times folks will try to combine these two ideas. And over time, it became even customary to refer to both of these feasts, Passover on the 14th day of the month, and then unleavened bread started the 15th for 7 days. They put these together, and they would just refer to all 8 days as the Passover. And so Passover is then considered to be an 8-day event, but technically that's not correct. Passover was to be for 1 day, and the Feast of Unleavened Bread was for 7 days. And also, it happens to go with the beginning of the barley harvest. So I guess that has some implications as well to the Jewish people. The best example I can give you of this is when I was a kid, and this was like it as far back as I can remember, we had spring break the second week of March. The Friday before spring break, we had something called Rodeo Day. And so we all got out of school on Friday, and they had the big parade. It used to be on Friday instead of Saturday. We'd all go downtown to the big parade, and then you could go out and you could get in cheap to the rodeo, and then we'd go spend whatever money we could scrounge up over at the carnival. And that was just like the big deal. Now they've moved the rodeo back to February, and it doesn't work anymore. But we had Rodeo Day on Friday, and then we had spring break the following week. So if you were to run into me on, you know, that Friday, you might say, how come you're not in school? And I'd say, man, I'm on spring break. And technically that wouldn't be correct, because on Friday, I would be out of school because of Rodeo Day. But I just kind of lumped it all together. Once you got out of school, we left that building at 3:30 on Thursday. I'm on spring break. Technically, that's not correct. But that's kind of what we did. We would clump it all together, and that extra rodeo day just kind of bled over into spring break. I guess that's kind of similar here. Passover and unleavened bread oftentimes are going to get clumped together. Even in the scripture sometimes, it's hard to tell the difference of the two. Now, this is a neat part. The idea of unleavened bread and this feast, it's talked about in Exodus, it's talked about in Leviticus, it's talked about in Numbers and in Deuteronomy, but I really like this because of this phrase in the Deuteronomy's account. Deuteronomy 16:3, you shall eat no unleavened bread with it. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread with it. That is the bread of affliction, for you came out of the land of Egypt in haste, that you may remember the day in which you came out of the land of Egypt all the days of your life. I just really liked that phrase, the bread of affliction. That's what that unleavened loaf was referred to. And so over the years, even on the Passover meal, the Jews would refer to those unleavened bread, those cakes of unleavened bread, as the bread of affliction. So I'm not going to get too much into this. I'll save this later, but I want you to think about kind of the symbolic nature of it, that here is Jesus on the night of his betrayal. He takes the bread of affliction. And here he is, the self-proclaimed bread of life. So the bread of life takes the bread of affliction and says, take, eat. This is my body which is broken for you. Have you ever thought about the powerful image that occurs from this unleavened bread? I think that's kind of interesting. Now this idea of bread of affliction or bread of sorrows or bread of adversary, there are several different translations of it. This is what Matthew Poole's commentary says. The bread of affliction was bread which is not usual nor pleasant, but unsavory and unwholesome, to put thee in mind both of thy miseries endured in Egypt and of thy hasty coming out of it, which allowed thee no time to leaven or to prepare thy bread. If you ate nothing but unleavened bread for 7 days, it was probably not going to be too pleasant. It didn't taste very good. It's very dense. It's hard to digest. The body doesn't like it. You would have some digestive problems. And it was to remind people, it was bad. And it was something, this guy says, unsavory and unwholesome. It was not something that you would like. And so I think it's interesting that they were to do that for 7 consecutive days. This was not just one time. Now, we may not get too much. I don't hear the Lord's Supper. We'll take a pinch of unleavened bread. And then we'll come back the next week and take a pinch of unleavened bread. Imagine eating nothing but unleavened bread for 7 consecutive days. You would probably realize what the Lord was trying to say there. It was to be a reminder of how they had to leave Israel quickly, or leave Egypt rather, quickly. They didn't have time to make it. And for them to remember how bad it was in Egypt. And hopefully that would keep people from saying, man, I wish we could go back to Egypt. Of course, you know what happened. It didn't take very long at all. And that's what they said. Why'd you bring us out here? At least in Egypt, we got to eat cucumbers and onions. Why don't you just let us go back to Egypt and die? It didn't take them long. But I think that was the purpose of this bread of affliction. God wanted them to remember that things in Egypt were not good. And they had to leave quickly. And that was the idea behind the bread of affliction. So that's the Old Testament story. And so it's, like I said, it's mentioned in Exodus. It's mentioned in Numbers, Leviticus, Deuteronomy. But I wanted to see, how does this apply to the New Testament? Well, there are a handful of literal references in the New Testament. There's not a lot. One is found in Mark 14:1. This was the last week of the life of Jesus. And it talks about how the Jewish leaders wanted to arrest Jesus. But yet they said, we better not, because that is the time of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. So it had carried over into the New Testament. The Jews were still celebrating it. I didn't put the slide up here, but 14:1 says, after 2 days it was the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread. So it was still being celebrated at the time of Jesus. I've often wondered how sincere sometimes the children of Israel were in the Jewish nation. Did they celebrate Passover and Feast of Unleavened Bread every single year like they were supposed to? I don't think so. I'm curious how many times they did. You know, you can read, I think, you know, King Josiah found the book of the law kind of, when they were remodeling, he found it somewhere in a crevice, and all of a sudden he realized, oh, we're supposed to be doing all these sacrifices. I'm guessing they had not been doing everything like they were supposed to. I wonder how many times they celebrated it correctly. And that's an answer that I don't know. But I've just been curious about that. But at least in Mark chapter 14, the last week of the life of Jesus, they were celebrating the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And that's when the Jewish leaders wanted to arrest Jesus. But they said, I better not, because it's the feast and we don't want to mess with them there. Acts 12:3 also talks about Herod arrested Peter during the time of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. So I know of two very specific literal references to the Feast of Unleavened Bread. It was a very important time. And here we go. It's in Passover. It all gets kind of lumped together. And it was one of the festivals that the Jewish men were required to go to Jerusalem. And so it was a very big date on the Jewish calendar. Now, what about a symbolic reference? Now, this is where it starts getting fun. So if you will, you may want to pull your Bible out here to 1 Corinthians chapter 5. Because this is a little lengthy of a passage, but not too bad. But a very symbolic reference to both Passover, to unleavened bread, and to the unleavened bread itself. So 1 Corinthians chapter 5 is somewhat of a symbolic reference. And now think about what we've talked about, what what it means. 1 Corinthians 5, verses 6 through 8. And before I get too much into this, think about the context of this chapter. What the context of this chapter is about sexual immorality in the church at Corinth. And he is talking about how there is a member that is doing something that is not proper. And this is where that phrase comes from. In fact, it's one of, I can remember, it's one of Ronnie Wade's lesson titles, because I remember typing it up, Deliver Such a One to Satan. So if you remember that phrase, that's where this whole passage comes from. But here we go. Your glorying is not good. That's what he tells the Corinthians, that they were glorying in the sin of one of their members. And he says, your glorying is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? Therefore, purge out the old leaven, that you may make a new lump, since you truly are unleavened. For indeed Christ, our Passover, was sacrificed for us. Then verse 8, he says, therefore, let us keep the feast, not with old leaven, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. And so all of a sudden, the Apostle Paul begins to try to tie all these ideas together. He mentions the unleavened bread, he mentions the Passover, and he begins to mention leaven. So we've already got the bread of affliction. Here's another cool phrase, the leaven of malice and wickedness. That's kind of a neat phrase. The bread, the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. So he's drawn a lot of metaphors from this idea of this feast of unleavened bread and of the Passover that was to go with it. So keep in mind, the context of this passage was immorality in the church, even to the point of having to deliver such a one to Satan. So in other words, what he's saying, it doesn't take much. It doesn't take much to ruin you. As Judge Judy calls it, she calls this the blueberry principle. That if you have one blueberry that's rotten, one spoiled blueberry, it'll ruin the whole batch. The 99 good blueberries don't fix the one bad one, but that one bad one can ruin the whole batch. And so that's the idea of leaven. He said, I'm not much of a baker. I tried my grandma's recipe. If I remember correctly, I think it was 4 cups of flour. If I remember correctly, and maybe, I think it was a tablespoon of yeast. It doesn't take much yeast to leaven that entire lump. And I remember you had to mix it up, and you had to dig your finger in it, and it was called a well. And you made a little well in the top of that mess, and you poured that yeast in top of that, and that's how you made that bread. But there was a whole lot more flour than there was yeast, because it just takes a little bit to get through it. So when we think about leaven, and here Paul calls it the leaven of malice and wickedness. So when I say, what does leaven represent in the scriptures? It's very easy to say, well, leaven is a symbol of sin. And that's true. In Mark the 8th chapter, verse 15, the Lord says, he charged them, saying, take heed, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod. Beware of the yeast. All it takes is a little bit, and that little bit can permeate everything. Galatians 5 and 9, Paul kind of reiterates this again. A little leaven leavens the whole lump. It just takes a little bit. A little sin can infect the entire body and deliver it to death. So, would you say that leaven is a symbol of sin? Yeah, it kind of is. I think more specifically what leaven is a symbol of, yeast or leaven, and the idea is a symbol that a little can take over everything. And it can be good, or it can be bad. So normally we think of leaven being sin, and that's what Mark 8:15, it's this idea of the sin of the Pharisees and the sin of Herod, how all it takes is a little bitty one or two people can spread through everything. But the Lord also uses leaven as the symbol of the church. So leaven is not always in the scriptures negative. In fact, in Matthew 13:33, another parable he spoke to them, the kingdom of heaven is like leaven. See, he's not saying the kingdom of heaven is like sin. That's not what he's saying. He says the kingdom of heaven is like leaven, which a woman took and hid in 3 measures of meal till it was all leaven. So what's that in reference to? It's not in reference to sin. It's that idea of having a whole bunch of flour and having a little bit of leaven or a little bit of yeast. You put that little bit of yeast, it takes care of the whole lump. I think here is in reference to the phenomenal growth of the church. Started with a very small nucleus of believers and then was able to spread through the entire world. It started with just a handful of disciples. And then we added some women, that some of them that were not very well thought of in the community. And these disciples, these apostles that Jesus took, they were not all Rhodes scholars. And they didn't come from the best families. Now, some of them did. Some of them had good jobs and were, you know, well off. Others were fishermen. And there was one of them, in fact, he was a tax collector, which is about as low down the totem pole as you can get. But he took all, he just took whoever he wanted. He had a small little nucleus, and all of a sudden, the gospel exploded throughout, basically, through the entire known world, just about by the end of the first century. Within just a couple generations, the gospel had been spread all over the world. And see how little bit of leaven. He says the kingdom of heaven is like, it's like leaven. All it takes is a little bit. A little can spread. So it doesn't necessarily have to be negative, but normally we think of leaven as being a symbol of something that is sinful. So, was it important that they had unleavened bread? I think that had meaning to it, that the leaven had been removed, that which was sinful was taken out. And I think that's important. That's why on the Lord's table, if they had unleavened bread there at the Passover Supper, then we're going to have unleavened bread as well. And that's where that comes from. So, in conclusion, I told you this would be a short lesson. Just have a handful. The Feast of Unleavened Bread was to begin on the 15th day of the first month of the year, in this month of Nisan, and last until the 21st. It's commonly joined together with Passover, with many considering both of them together as one 8-day feast, but that's technically not correct. Passover was one day, and then it was 7 days for the Feast of Unleavened Bread. So even though a lot of people combine them into one 8-day feast, technically that is not correct. That is not what God wanted them to do. Number three, the feast was to commemorate the haste with which the Israelites left Egypt. The idea was they did not have time to wait for the bread to rise and to make bread. They had to leave in the middle of the night when the Egyptians finally said, "Get out now." Number four, the bread of affliction. That's what unleavened bread was known as, bread of affliction. And think about that image, that it was used by the Lord in the Last Supper. He took the bread of affliction, the bread of life, took the bread of affliction. I still think that's just a neat image. And finally, leaven usually represents sin in the Bible. But that's not always the case. And so think about the parable that Jesus gave. The idea of leaven, more specifically, is that a little can take care of a lot. Usually bad. That's usually the example that we try to give our kids. Stay away from that guy. He's a bad influence. All it takes is one bad influence and they can take over. We try to tell our kids, hey, stay away from drinking, stay away from drugs. All it takes is one time and it can take you over. So normally we think of leaven and that idea of being negative and being bad. But leaven can also be good. That if we think about a handful of people started this wonderful organization, and from just a small group of 11, 12, 13 people, the church was able to spread throughout the entire world. And how impressive that is. So, there is a story, kind of the basic understanding of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, where it came from, what it means, and I think we can already see how some of the symbolism is starting to fall into place. Especially when Paul starts talking about the Lord being the Passover, and this idea of being unleavened. There's something to that. It's something that's important. So hopefully we kind of start building our understanding of the symbolic nature of the unleavened bread. So there's our second feast.